Welcome to the Living Dice Podcast, Episode 1. Today's topic, the plot. Welcome to the inaugural Living Dice Podcast. My name is Trent. This is my cohort, Stuart.
Welcome.
Welcome indeed. Yes, as our inaugural podcast, we are going to spend the briefest moment talking about why you should listen to us about tabletop gaming and what livingdice.com actually is. I'll start. My name is Trent. I've been gaming for 33 years. During that time, I have focused primarily on role-playing games. I have written for Living Campaigns. I created the livingdice.com website, which I have been blogging at for the past 10 years. And this is our new podcast adjunct to that website. And we're going to cover, hopefully, some interesting tabletop role-playing topics and board games. We're not going to leave board games out of it either. And conventions, maybe the occasional Comic-Con comment will slip in as well. But we just want to jump right into it. So, Stuart, tell us about your bona fides.
Well, not quite as many years as you, Trent, but I have about 27 years under my belt with starting in high school. And I think over the years, we both of us have a unique perspective because we're both the type of gamers that like to try different games. So, you know, you hear people who've been playing for 50 years or, well, not that long, but playing Dungeons and Dragons or whatever. But there's probably very few major game systems out there that we haven't played. So we have a well-versed vocabulary in the role-playing game world. Me personally, I also have a master's in business. So I'm interested in the business side of gaming. We'll probably talk about that a little bit through the shows. And I have a passion for communication and telling a good story, which is kind of dovetailing into what we're talking about today, correct?
Indeed, indeed. Today, rather than spend the next 30 minutes talking about our intrinsic gaming awesomeness, we're actually going to talk about something you want to hear about, which is the plot. Kind of a sore spot for me, because on role-playing games, the plot often gets short shrift in favor of the mechanics, and I think that's a tragic, tragic state of affairs.
Not only is it tragic, I mean, the plot is really the most important thing. The plot is going to be the thing that people leave the gaming table and remembering, and it's going to be the thing that gets them excited to come back again, not, you know, the rules on how to, you know, do some cattle ranging or, you know, opening treasure chest in 50 feet underwater or whatever rules you want to bring up.
Indeed. And that is kind of my segue to this topic. So the plot, I actually am sort of ambivalent about a lot of role-playing game plots, because more often than not, they truncate the introduction. And I think that's a missed opportunity. All too often, especially if you're playing at a convention or even some home games, and certainly some of the offerings available for purchase, the plot hook is defined as such so obviously that you're just sort of saying, okay, that's the plot hook. And you literally sit there at the table and say, oh, that's the plot hook. It's not as organic as it might be.
Are you referencing maybe the group starts in a tavern and some cloaked man comes in and has a job for you to do?
Oh, that hurts. That hurts a lot.
Yeah, I agree with you that the beginning of the plot, the beginning of your story, your game, you have to get your characters invested. There has to be some sort of tie, some sort of event, something that makes the characters, yes, because you're playing a role-playing game, but the people at the table playing those characters, something to get them excited about playing the game.
Right. Now, in an example that I used previously, the Numenera campaign I ran for a couple of years off and on, the introduction was handled by all the characters waking up in various states of perceived danger when it turns out they've all just been incredibly hungover and they wake up in the drunk tank. And they, you know, rise to the occasion and realize, oh, what happened last night? And that's the start of the story. And that drives them into a obvious, it's a plot hook. I'm not going to try to disguise it. They're not stupid. They're going to figure it out. But it seemed a little more entertaining to say, kind of have that start moment of like, yeah, we woke up and we shared the drunk tank moment together and we have esprit de corps now.
Yes. The unexpected is always good. Keep the players on your toes, on their toes, and they're going to be more engaged in your story. And that's really what the plot's all about, is to drive those series events to weave the story that you want to tell.
Yeah, it's true. And you have to, a lot of role-playing games, at least the ones I've experienced, they tend to be a bit choppy in the sense that individual elements are good, but the transition between them doesn't seem to be very clean. It's, go ahead.
Now, are you talking about like pre-published adventures or just what the normal GM will do at the table?
Well, I'm going to make a slight distinction here because the pre-published adventures have been, theoretically anyway, play-tested, and the writing behind them tends to be of better quality, assuming it comes from some of the larger companies. I'm thinking more of a home game situation where the people are so anxious to get into it, whatever it is, the adventure, the plot, whatever you want to call it, that they tend to not have a clean transition between. So you have the initial introduction. The next is you've got some kind of rising action, some kind of adventure, you know, that starts to build. The threat level increases and they're just meet in tavern. And then there's the first obligatory thug attack, which
I got you.
Has happened so many times. We used to literally call it the OTA back in the days of Living Arcanus.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You know, that is true. I think a lot of that comes into GM skill as well. You've got to be able to transition because, you know, GM's going to have these kind of pre-planned, you know, portions to their plot, but they've got to have the skill to weave them, to adjust them on the fly to make, you know, the story at the table that's actually going to happen, which will be different from what you plan. You've got to be able to adapt to that to kind of make it a smooth transition. But to your point, yes, there should be a transition. I think you as a GM, you need to think about that and think about how a plot should kind of build over the course of the story, how you want to weave in elements to like the later part of your story, start weaving them in early. I mean, you've got to plan all of that or it's just not going to work.
Yeah. And the rising action element here, and by the way, for what it's, if you are aware of it, we're actually working through the standard five levels of plotting in a story, which is introduction, rising action, climax, falling action, and resolution. So for the rising action, I like to kind of add some level of threat, do some sort of interesting interaction with the main NPCs. In the case, again, of the Numenera campaign, which I'm afraid I'm going to bring up a couple of times because it's front in my mind right now, is that as they start investigating the plot line, they run across the main NPCs, some of whom are less than friendly. Some of them are incredibly friendly. And during this process, there is, I hate the obligatory thug attack, but there are threats, either explicit, actual physical danger, or implied, you know, stop investigating you, you know, meddling kids, or X will happen to you and X is bad. So that's kind of rising action. I prefer to do that as opposed to just, you know, and you're attacked.
Yeah, I think, you know, you want to make everything make sense. You know, obligatory thug attack can happen, but it needs to happen for the right reasons, not just, oh, you were here and I need some filler before we move on to the next thing. You know, there has to be a reason that, you know, the characters get too close to finding out something, they go to the wrong place at the wrong time, you know, just something that would make that element of your story make sense.
Right. And I think it should be clear that rising action doesn't necessarily have to be a combat encounter. Again, I think there is a bias towards basically throwing guns and grenades or whatever the weapons are at the particular game. And that counts as action. I would argue that you could certainly have rising action at a dinner party when you've got your players in there and they're trying to either gather information or perhaps set up a heist and they need to achieve something, and there could be a lot of sweat and stress involved, but you have to execute it with some care so it doesn't degenerate down into I draw my guns and all bets are off.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, some of that's going to come down to the your group that you're playing with, what kind of game you like. Some groups are really heavy into they want the combat, the beer and pretzels type. You have the type that doesn't want any combat. That's all story. Doesn't matter. Your underlying plot, your underlying story will be weaved into whatever style you want. And every piece of the plot, not just rising action, it does not need to include combat at all. Mm.
So now you've got the rising action. You've had some experiences that got the party warmed up. They're, you know, popping a bit. They are, the plot is beginning to hum along. They've done some things unexpected. And you reach the climax of the story. Well, a climax, let me clarify that. You can have multiple in the plot because most campaigns go on for extended periods of time, sometimes years or decades in real time.
Well, and I guess let's talk about that for a second, because that really doesn't matter. I think when you have a long-running campaign, you still need to break it into small stories, each with their own plot, or you're going to bore the heck out of your characters and your players. So you're going to have a string of plots. And then, what you would want to do is probably have an overriding plot across your entire campaign, you know, working up to fight the demigod at level 10 or whatever.
Yeah, understood. And when I say climax, I mean basically a high point in the story. Classic example, Numenera campaign again. The players, due to a bit of good luck, had a nuclear weapon. I'm not joking. They actually had a legitimate 5 square kilometer gets vaporized nuclear weapon. They carried it around. They were very pleased with themselves for having this. They find the evil lair. They find the evil MacGuffin that's trying to conquer the world. Right, we're going to nuke it. And they plant that and they push the button and they run. And they, of course, have to fight to get out because the bomb's ticking and there's bad guys outside and they got to make a run for it. High drama. So for that climax, I think the key element, and I'm sure you remember the old Midake story involving Zoe about player activity. Whatever climax you have, the player should have his finger on the button.
Yes. Yes. Don't have them watch the story. Not in a role-playing game.
In the background there, we ran a region for the Living Arcanus campaign years ago. And one of our cohorts suggested we have this elaborate plot that involved, you know, the city being blown up. But his argument was the players should watch from a nearby mountain or something while it exploded. And I found that completely unacceptable. If you're going to blow up a city, there's going to be a player character with a pair of pliers trying to cut the blue or the green wire to determine whether or not the city goes up.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, unless it's in kind of your exposition phase, if you're setting your plot scene with this city being blown up and dealing with the aftermath, that's one thing. As the climax, no way.
Yeah. A player is going to have his finger on the button, on the wire, whatever, to do the detonation.
Yeah. Or a bad guy and you've got to stop them. I mean, whatever the case may be, but they need to be involved.
Indeed. And as I said, the player characters in the campaign, they nuked the bad guy. Hooray, the heroes won. Now it's time for everybody to recover. Oh, that's so good. Now we have the falling action, the kind of denouement where the story sort of slows down and you sort of pick up the pieces before the credits roll. Again, go ahead.
Oh, I say, I would like to stress for GMs out there, do not ignore this piece of the plot, this falling action. This is where your characters, where your players make their characters shine. This is where they do what they want to do. They take their ill-gotten gains and, you know, set up bread and breakfasts or whatever they want to do with their money. You know, this is where they really get into their non-adventuring side of the character, tying up all these loose ends, talking to different people, you know, really playing it out. And don't shortchange your players.
Yeah, I'm afraid that, again, due to a better yard part of 60 years of gaming experience between the two of us, far too many of the campaigns we played in, especially the production modules with GMs that aren't quite as adept at extemporaneous sort of plot creation, the falling action scene is the fires from the nuclear weapon have burned out, and hey, it's over.
It's read to you, yeah. And then the end, yeah.
Yeah, and you're
playing, yeah, don't do that.
Your PC just doesn't have a great opportunity to really go out and what was the one that he always, one of our players used to, oh, he was trying to build a hotel while we were playing Aces and Eights, and that was after every completion of something, he was going off to improve his hotel to try to create a business.
Perfecting his pigeon pie.
Pigeon pie at the hotel. So, in fact, the pigeon pie joke has been ongoing for the better part of 10 years now.
Yeah, so that's all the falling action. So
yeah, indeed. And so you've got the falling action. Peace is once again upon the land. You've come to the resolution. Again, I think this part is pretty obvious. It's over. But I would argue that on an ongoing campaign, the resolution and the introduction are effectively the same thing.
Yes, I think you could call it a transition instead of a resolution, because right. You will be starting up the next plot from the beginning, right. The exposition phase.
Right. So essentially, we get a bell curve. We start at the bottom. It reaches the climax, comes down, resolution into introduction. Now, that said, it should be noted that if you're a GM on your toes, you should have been planning the resolution way back at, if you're really good, at the very beginning, or if you've got an issue with players running amok, which is what they tend to do. At the very least, the climax should have a landing spot past falling action into the resolution that is an introduction, and it needs to be fairly clean and smooth, as opposed to it's over and now we're doing something else. It just doesn't seem very organic.
Yeah, yeah. Now that aside, I guess one counterpoint. We are playing a game here. We're all real people. We have stuff that we do outside of playing games. You know, it just depends on your GM. You know, sometimes they don't have 10 hours to sit and plan out this master plan, and they've got, you know, 1 hour to put some bullet points together. So telling a good story is one thing, but also we have to understand that there's some level of, you know, plot hook that drags us along. That's going to happen, you know, and between the resolution of one plot and the beginning of the other, it happens a lot. You know, you end your scene one place, and then the GM's next cool story idea is, you know, across the world and in an island somewhere, you know. It's probably best for everyone if you just kind of fast forward to that rather than to try to drag it out to make sure it's all clean, crisp, and played.
Understood. And I agree with that. I understand that there's real world considerations here, that not everyone has oceans of free time to do the development on this. But, you know, that said, the plot itself deserves pride of place over and above setting, mechanics, NPC, everything else is in service to the plot. And if you ignore that, pretty much the rest of it doesn't matter, because if you start with something bad, everything subsequent to that is going to be even worse.
Yes, absolutely. And keep that in mind as a GM. You know, it's, if you're not playing, the encounter that you're playing doesn't matter to the plot, then try to make it matter to the plot, because other than that, it, like you said, it's just kind of a waste. I mean, hopefully people are still having fun, but, you know, no one wants to spend half a game session, you know, chasing down some lead to find out, oh no, he's not the wrong thing. You did the wrong thing and you should have go back and start over. Now, if you spend half the game chasing down this person who you didn't plan on making a plot element, guess what? He's now a plot element, and you have to weave him into the story to make it matter.
Yeah, and when you're doing that, obviously you just have to think on your feet and adapt and overcome. But you have to also give – I want to be clear here. I don't want to create a situation where you have this overlord game master, dungeon master, who writes a plot from which you shall not deviate under penalty of death. The infamous railroad.
Yeah. railroading is not going to make a good situation for anyone, even the GM, I think. You know, it's hard, though, especially with new GMs, especially new GMs who were starting out using pre-printed adventures, because for the most part, those are railroaded adventures. There are some other styles adventures, like the Instant Adventures from Monte Cook Games, that kind of take that back and give you more of the plot elements. But for the most part, they're starting their GM career learning by having a railroaded adventure. Try to stay clear of that. You'd want to, I mean, we don't have to go back to the GM that can write 5 bullet points on a piece of paper and then run 4 hours off of that. That's a skill of being a good GM. But having a good plot requires you to have the focus on the pieces of a plot, match it up to activities that you want to perform, but keep it fluid so it's not railroading. And I guess I have a tip for everyone. Your players are going to write half of the plot for you. You know, you mentioned earlier, Trent, about characters going off the rails or hijinks or whatever the case.
Running amok, I think was the
thing. Running amok, yes. That's a good thing. I mean, that's where the fun comes from. You as a GM, harness that into your plot. So, for example, say in your climax, they're going to fight, you know, some evil wizard in a tower. Don't pre-plan where that tower is. In fact, don't even necessarily plan that's a tower. I mean, you can kind of roughly plan it. But if they're off, you know, spending the whole game session in a warehouse and doing whatever they're doing, maybe there's a secret door in the bottom that leads down to a lair where this guy is. Or, you know, wherever you meet, bring your plot to where the characters are. That's how you get out of the sense of railroading, because as much as we say don't railroad, unless you're a purely extemporaneous GM who just come up with everything on the fly, you are railroading. You have what you want your characters to do planned out in advance. You have the story planned out. It's the difference of making it feel to the characters that it's not planned out.
No, the players, actually, not the characters.
The players. So that make it feel like it's not planned out. That's why you want to keep your story design as manipulative as possible. Move it here and there as you see fit.
So I've always been taking issue with the term sandbox for a plot, because it's used both in video games and in tabletop RPGs for any game where the players can sort of wander about the table. And I think a better analogy would be an island chain where the players are on a boat and they can visit any island in the chain, sometimes out of order, but you should have the islands pre-built. Does that make sense? In the sense that you might sail to B first instead of A. That's okay. You know, you just have to adjust for it a little, but I prefer to see little islands of plot as opposed to this sort of linear railroad, which of course isn't very much fun. As an example, the aforementioned nuclear incident with the players. Stuart, would you like to tell everyone who's listening what happened after the nuclear weapon went off?
I'd like to plead the fifth.
So the players nuke the bad guy's lair. Excellent. They destroy all of his heinous bioweapons and whatnot. They go back to their, in the following action resolution phase, they go back to their coastal village a few days later and discovered that the fallout from their nuclear blast has mutated half the town into these horrifying ancient Cthulhoid monsters that are currently destroying half the city. And now we're in Numenera version of The Walking Dead with flying amphibious psionic ancient aliens. Turned out great for me as a GM, but it was worth it just for the moment. About 2/3 of the way into this new storyline, they realized that they indeed caused the problem.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's a good example of a good transition between the resolution of one plot and then the exposition phase starting again with a new plot. Even though all of this happened, we still kind of had a falling action phase where we could do some cleanup. We pulled our little submarine into the harbor and started some side businesses and doing all these shenanigans before, you know, as, and it kind of overlapped. So we were doing the falling action as the exposition was starting to take root. So that's a good example for an ongoing campaign that you can overlap those a little bit.
And actually, you can actually plant seeds further back, in your chain to sort of seed activities forward. But your point about going back to your initial point about the players generating half the plot, I had a completely different plot line in mind. But the fact the players helpfully set off, you know, Trinity test project right on top of biochemical weapons depot, that was just too good of an opportunity to pass up. I mean, that was a gift. So suddenly all this stuff's running around, blowing up and landing on cities and mutating people into winged demons. Wow, I can work with that material.
Yeah, yeah. So how far in advance did you have plotted for that chain of adventure? Did you have to just take the eraser and restart anew, or were you able to work some of those elements into the new plot
structure?
Actually,
I have to honestly say at I had the resolution planned. So once you guys cleared that chemical weapons depot by whatever method, I had anticipated going from a sort of quest to more of a high seas adventure thing, where you went across and just started sailing around and like trying to make money, like doing traders. And if that was what you were interested in, more of a high seas adventure as opposed to it's like almost like the adventure we were playing was essentially a Sinbad movie where you had a specific goal, like you were supposed to do X. And the new one, I was going to give you guys a lot more, give the opportunity to just run around and, you know, play pirate or, you know, be traders or escort ships. They had a little submarine they were running around in, stuff like that. That went out the window in favor of The Walking Dead. So I couldn't turn down that opportunity.
Yeah. You know, I guess if we want to have a different kind of example, the Star Wars game that I was running, I tried a new kind of plot structure where I would still take the same elements of the plot, but I tried to do it instead of at the story level. Well, I still did it at the story level, but I tried to do it at the individual game session level. So what I would do is, you know, I'd have some loose bullets planned for the overall plot, but then when I sat down to plan the evening's game, I would plan setting up the scene and building so few encounters, building it and having a climax and a quasi resolution that happens all in the same game. I try that to kind of leave the players with a sense of, you know, like accomplishment, a sense of, you know, you finished watching the TV episode. Not always, because a lot of times when you play the games, you just kind of play until, oh, it's 8 o'clock. We got to go home. Let's pause and start tomorrow. Even if you're like in the middle of the climax, and there's nothing worse than that. You're like in the middle of the big bad fight and then everyone has to go home. So I think, you know, I try to fit it into your time as well. However you do it, you don't have to plan all these mini plots per adventure, but at least plan the time that you have, so you end at appropriate pause point in your plot.
Yeah, I've always had issue with the mid-fight. I'd rather end the fight and have a resolution than say, okay, we're going to hold here while, you know, two people have been swallowed by the purple worm and we'll just make notes as to where everyone is and we'll start back up in a couple weeks. I really don't enjoy that, because you're just like, you have to remember where everything was. And I mean, there's some logistical issues over and above the fact that I think it's a poor way. I agree with you. I think fight's over. Everybody's trashed. You're laying on the ground. You need healing. You know, some guy got his arm ripped off. All right, yeah. We'll stop here because everybody's done.
Yeah, yeah.
But absolutely.
Yeah, it's the art of the cliffhanger. If you do it wrong, it just doesn't feel well.
Yeah, it does sort of, instead of a cliffhanger, you just have a straight up cliff fall and you just eat dirt at the bottom.
Yeah, we're looking at you, The Walking Dead television show.
Oh, if I had made it past season 2 and that farm, I would agree with you. I couldn't do that show anymore. It just caused me too much pain, nearly bored me to death. But anyway, off, that's just an aside about my argument about quality television I have with Stu all the time. So we are going to try to keep these shows at around 30 minutes. So at that, we are getting close to that. So we are going to fade out, but I encourage you to come to livingdice.com and check out both the podcast and 10 years worth of generated content. We have news, reviews, opinion, 1,000 articles, literally 1,050 right now, I believe. And there's a lot there to check out. So if you're interested in what we have to say, by all means, come drop by and check us out. Until then, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.